Rav Amital would very often quote the Katzke Rebbe to us and for us. Many of his famous one-liners of the Katzke Rebbe, obviously. And why did Rav Amital find the Katzke Rebbe so intriguing? I think it's because they were both counterintuitive. What I mean by counterintuitive is as follows. We get accustomed to seeing things in a certain way, bringing a certain set of presumptions. We frame our world. We fall into a routine. And of course, we're all creatures of routine, where our religious lives are held together by the duct tape of routine, by the glue and the bonding of routine. But the danger of routine is it becomes dry. It becomes sometimes less dynamic, less relevant. And sometimes there just are new and different circumstances that call for new and fresh views. And these are two people who had fresh views. I always tell people it's important to have people in life who can put your head on a swivel, who can make you think about things from different angles, from different perspectives, rather than just maintaining your standard or conventional perspective. And the Katzke Rebbe was certainly someone like that in his search for truth, in his search for authenticity. He was relentless and irrepressible in breaking through convention, standard, typical vantage points and perspectives. And Amital was also very counterintuitive in that respect. And just for those who haven't heard me speak about this before, I'll give one example. Amital would always tell us, you know how people say, at first I tried to change the world, and then when I realized I couldn't, I focused on changing my own family. And when I realized that was too difficult, I decided just to retreat into my own world and change myself. Rav Amital would raise his index finger and say, shtiyot, shtiyot, that's silly. He would wipe away these stale conventions. He'd say, at first people try to change themselves. When they can't change themselves, they try to change their family. A lot of people try to impress or shape family members as a substitute for their own inability to shape themselves. And when I found that too difficult, I tried to shape the world, try to change the world. Sometimes people that try to change the world, again, it's because of failure to change themselves or change their family. So he would turn things on a swivel, turn things upside down for us. And that's why I think he quoted the Kutsk so often, the Kutsk Rebbe. Anyway, so Parshas Veschanan was one of his favorite Kutsk Rebbe quotes, and this is the subject of one of the Sichot I want to summarize. When Har Sinai is being retold, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Pasuk, chronicles a seemingly redundant instruction. The Jewish people are very fearful. They ask Moshe to intercede. HaKadosh Baruch Hu announces, Halavai, mi yitain, they should have this sustained or enduring Yirat Shamayim. And then, Lechem or Lahem, go tell the Jewish people, Shuva Lechem Le'olechem. Hashem instructs Moshe to tell Am Yisrael to return to their tents, to return to their homes. Well, Moshe ve'atapo amodi madi. You stay with me. And the Gemara Megillah, of course, darshan's various halachos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu retaining Moshe in his presence. Why would the Torah have to record that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe specific instructions to the people to return home? Presumably, this was a natural conclusion. Whenever Har Sinai ended, the way that the Torah, let's say, describes it in Yisro, b'mshochai yovel hema'yelu vahar, the sound of the shofar signaled the end of the proceedings, the end of the ceremony, the end of the delivery. Hashem's call was no longer heard, and kolos uvarakim ceased, dwindled. People returned home. Where else would they go? So Rav Amital would always quote the Katzke Rebbe that the real challenge of life is not the high watermarks, the ecstatic spiritual highs of Har Sinai, but how can you apply them when you go home? Lech emor lechem shuv lechem le'olechem. Can you bring that experience to your home, back to your routine, back to your day-to-day? And this is why the Torah specifically records these instructions. It's one thing to be religious and inspired and elevated at Har Sinai. You're standing here in the voice of Hashem. There's thunder and lightning. This is an epic moment. Millions of people are surrounding you. What about in the quiet of your own home? Can you bring it home? Can you take it back to your routine? And Rav Amital elaborated on it. I remember he would say, Kinderlach, he speaks very often in Yiddish. Go home. That's the real test. The real test is not what happens in the Beis Medrash, but what happens when you go home. Now, what is that test? That test is really twofold. One is to be able to apply religion within your routine. It's less adventurous. It's less exciting. It's less inspiring and dramatic. Day to day repeats itself. Very repetitive, very seemingly boring. But can you live life that's boring, but that's full of substance, meaning, continuity? Very often people have an easier time with the adventurous and the exotic and the different. And I've spoken about this a lot. And especially in the modern era, we actually have a word for boredom, which existential boredom. It's called ennui, which frightens us. And can we accept boredom? Can we accept a life of continuity and repeated similar activities? But there is a second challenge, and that's to bring some of the spirit and not to forget the miracles and the supernatural moments, even when your life becomes repetitive and your life returns to the tent from our Sinai. It's not just to implement religion in the tent, but to remember the spiritual inspiration of the mountain when you're back home in your tent. And to help portray this, Rav Amital spoke about the famous Atzamos Yeveshos, the dry bones in Yechezkel's Nevuah, who come to life. And we don't hear about who they are. We don't really know who they are. And we also don't know why they didn't say Shir, why they didn't say any Hallel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You would have expected the conclusion of the Atzamos Yeveshos, of this whole scene, to be this eruption of praise and Hallel and giving thanks and gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for resurrecting them. That would be, if you were scripting the movie, you'd imagine this mass song, this mass praise after the bones are reconstituted, after the lives are resurrected. Yet we don't know who they are, nor do we see them saying Hallel. So the Gemara Sanhedrin of Tzadik Beis discusses this. So according to Blazer and Yeshua, they did say Hallel. And then they died immediately, so it was a very short life. So we don't know who they were because they didn't live past that immediate moment, but they said Hallel. According to Behuda, this is all just an allegory. So of course they didn't say Hallel, nor do we know their identities, because it never really occurred. It's an allegory. There are no real people to identify, nor is there real Shira to document. But there's a third opinion, not the opinion that they died immediately and therefore their identities are suppressed and their Hallel is not recorded, or not that it's an allegory, they never really existed. But it's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Osha b'Yaseglili, Rabbi Elazar the son of b'Yaseglili, who said that they actually lived, and they lived long lives. It's not an allegory, and they didn't die immediately. And they made Aliyah to Israel. Of course, Yechezkel's Nevuah is in Babel, or not in Babel, but he's standing in Babel. And they married women, and they gave birth to children. The Lashon of the Gemara is, Alu l'Eretz Yisrael nasur nashim v'lidu banu muvanos. So according to this third position, why don't we know who they are? Who were their children's names? And more poignantly, why didn't they say Hallel? And Rav Amital understood the answer to be because they just returned to normalcy. They returned to routine and they lost some of that inspiration. And they forgot to say Hallel because their lives became children, schoolwork, homework, occupation, jobs, community, responsibility, taking out the garbage, doing the diapers, and earning a living. And sometimes it's that heaviness of our routine that that diminishes, that quells or suppresses our inspiration. Can we live inspired lives, lives of idealism, under the weight, the massive weight of our day-to-day routine, which is very, not dreary, but it's very repetitive, it's very onerous, constantly running? How can we find ways not just to implement religion in our homes, in our olim, leich shuv alechem le'olechem, but also to keep inspiration, to keep passion? I'm assuming this resonates deeply with people who are in the process of raising families and are carrying heavy weights of family, responsibility, community, job, profession. And sometimes it's hard to feel inspired or inspired lives. And this is also what Parshas Ves Hanan talks about, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu predicts that when we come into Israel and we'll build cities and we'll inhabit comfortable homes, so we'll forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yisham Alecha Pentishkach, Es Hashem, Asher Hotziacha, Meretz Mitzrayim, Mibes Avadim. So the charge of Shuv Alechem Le'olechem is really a dual charge. On the one hand, to be capable of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu within the routine, but on the other hand, to animate the routine with ideals, with vision. There are often boys come over to me in yeshiva and they're having a hard time learning. And generally, it breaks down to one of two issues. To really succeed, especially in learning the Beis Medrash, learning difficult tracts of Gemara, difficult agendas of Gemara, you need to have two things. You need motivation / discipline, but you need vision. All the motivation and discipline in the world, where is this heading? Why do I want to learn so much Gemara? It's not going to give me an immediate spiritual push, immediate spiritual high. These are very, very technical Gemaras. But if you learn Gemara for many, many years, you'll be a Talmud Chacham, and you'll see certain glories of Torah, certain beauty and majesties of Torah that you wouldn't otherwise see. But that takes long-term investment. Long-term investment takes, on the one hand, discipline and motivation. On the other hand, a vision. Where is this all heading? Where is this all landing? Why is it important? So in life, sometimes we need moments to reflect. What is our long-term vision? Why are we working so hard? What do we hope to accomplish? How will this feed our long-term vision in order to maintain inspiration even within the repetitiveness of our lives?